Paddy Power giving all customers a £5 free bet for Man City v Real Madrid. Just log in and claim on site. Terms and conditions apply. 18+.
Hello and welcome back to the Football Postcast here on The Racing Post, your one-stop shop for all of your finest football analysis. The Premier League and the EFL may be over, but attention now turns to the Champions League and the Europa League. To go through all of that today, we have a star-studded lineup of Mark Langdon and Jack Ogilvy from the Racing Post Sport Desk and the man that probably speaks about football in his sleep, Mr. Jason Murphy from Paddy Power. Gents, great to have you along once again. Football still rumbles on. We're into August and there's still plenty to talk about, which is brilliant. Before we get into any previews this week, let's discuss the game that we witnessed last night on Tuesday. It was the playoff final between Fulham and Brentford. Fulham will be joining Leeds and West Brom in the Premier League next season. Mark, Brentford fans must be gutted because they were flying all season. Many fancied them to gain promotion and they just fell short, didn't they?
They did. They will be gutted, obviously. I mean, I think footballing-wise, probably second only to Leeds. Talent-wise, you'd probably say second only to Leeds. You know, not often you can get that kind of front three, particularly Benrahma and Watkins, you know, playing as well as what they have done for so long. But they didn't really play that one. I don't think they can have that many regrets last night in terms of the fact they weren't that unlucky. I think they just didn't play like we'd come to expect of them. Obviously, a goalkeeping error in extra time cost them. But I still think, you know, you can try, if you are a Brentford fan or somebody that's maybe looking to back them next season, you can trust them to make good the money that they're probably going to make out of the sales of Benrahma and Watkins. You know, they've done it before. They'll do it again. They'll be right up there next year.
Yeah, Jason, it seems as if Brentford are always there or thereabouts, but can never quite get there. Fulham, on the other hand, Scott Parker's done a wonderful job. It seems as if they've kind of gone under the radar a little bit this season, and yet when it mattered, they made it count, didn't they?
Yeah, especially towards the back end of the season there, they really did make a count. And based on the match last night as a standalone game, you know, Fulham deserved to go through, I thought. We were texting the WhatsApp group last night. I think it was probably 25% was probably a goalkeeper mistake, but it was 75% cleverness to punish it and execute it. It was a really unusual goal that you would see, take it by surprise. But I think it should be applauded for brilliance as opposed to putting more of the proportion to blame on the goalkeeper. But it's a big challenge for Fulham next season. We have them just odds on to go down. Hate to be pessimistic or negative after just getting promoted. We have them 10 to 11. The big concern I have is, if you look at the back line, Ream, O'Doy, Brian, they all played in that Premier League season when they went down, and you know, they conceded 81 goals. That's by far and away the worst defensive record in the Premier League we've seen in the last five or six seasons. Now, I know Parker talks about how the mentality has changed, but it's still a concern that, you know, they're going back up with three of the back four that kind of played that season for them. The positive, obviously, is going to be Mitrovic. He's, you know, he got 38% of their goals this season, 26 of the 69 that they scored. And the year that they were in the Premier League, he got 11 goals from that season. Probably needs to score a few more next season if they're going to stay up. And the big mistake probably was as a club, like they brought in about 15 new signings going into that Premier League season. And we've seen Aston Villa employ a similar strategy this season and just about pull it out of the bag at the end, whereas it just went into the disaster for Fulham. And, you know, they went through three managers over the course of the season. The one thing that I think is really interesting and I'd like to see happen from Fulham point of view is Anguissa. The year that went down, he was actually probably their best player in midfield. He was a really good player that just got lost in a really bad team. He went on loan to Villarreal this season and he's been fantastic, absolutely brilliant for Villarreal, to the point where he's actually been linked with a move to Real Madrid. You know, could be paper talk, but like I said, for Fulham for next season, it's Scott Parker probably not to make as many changes as they did the last time they came up. Try and get the best out of the team that he has with a few additions. Like I said, I have the striker Mitrovic, which is so important for a team to stay up. And like I said, they'll have a fighting chance like every team does going into it, but it will be a struggle for them next season.
Definitely. Jack, with Leeds, West Brom and Fulham, it's going to be incredibly tough. That jump into the Premier League is massive. Who do you think has the best chance of survival?
Well, I think it's going to be interesting to see how Leeds get on, because I think when Bielsa came in, it was almost a step into the unknown, and I think the break suited them more than anybody else. I think Leeds will be all right. West Brom, Slaven Bilic, as a West Ham fan, I'm not afraid to admit it this early on, but his defensive, for a great defender, his coaching of the defence wasn't so good. And, well, the question marks are over Fulham, aren't they, at the back? I think they'll offer a lot more than they did the last time. I think Michael Hector's made a massive difference since being available for them. Surprisingly, only, he's 28, I was surprised about when I looked it up. He'll make a big difference. But they've already got 15 goals in them with Mitrovic. If you can get the ball to him regularly, I think Fulham have got a better chance this time than they did last time. I think Leeds will be all right. They'll fly out of the traps, and I think they'll have a 25 points by Christmas. West Brom, though, will be my worry.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see how all three of them teams go about trying to survive in the Premier League. Of course, two of the newly promoted sides into the Premier League this season survived. Can it? They make it three next season? Best of luck to all of them. Mark, let's have a quick word on the FA Cup final. Of course, Arsenal went on to win it. That was last weekend. You were very keen on Arsenal early doors. Postcast listeners hopefully would have listened to you when you tipped them up early on in the competition. What was it about them that stood out to you?
It was Mikel Arteta. I can't remember which game it was that they played. It was that hectic Christmas period. It may even have been the Chelsea game when they lost but played really well. And then they beat United a couple of days later. And I think you could just tell immediately that Arteta had it. He's definitely somebody that has taken some stuff on from Pep Guardiola. But I also think he's his own man, and he's got his own thoughts and opinions. And I just think it was a really impressive appointment. They, of course, tried to do it previously, didn't they? And then lost the faith a little bit and went through Unai Emery. Sort of didn't trust in Arteta because, of his lack of experience. But you can just see I think the way that he's got them working together. The way that they play football. As a Spurs fan, I'm nervous because this looks like the sort of upside for Arsenal, I think, is a lot more now than when Unai Emery was in charge. Emery was, as a Spurs fan, I was quite happy when Emery got the job because I thought he was only going to take Arsenal so far. There's kind of a ceiling to what he can do. Whereas with Arteta, and I mentioned it last week in the podcast, that I can see similarities between what Pochettino did immediately at Tottenham, get rid of the bad eggs in the dressing room. You will get inconsistent results because, you know, you're trying to bring in a new brand of football. You're relying on younger players in parts, and that doesn't bring consistency. It just can't. But you have a look at sort of some of these results now. They beat Manchester United. They did some difficult away games with 10 men. At Chelsea, they won at Wolves 2-0. Wouldn't really have fancied a Wenger or Unai Emery team to go and do that. They beat Liverpool, they beat Man City, and they beat Chelsea to win. In sort of a short space of time, they're a team I think that's got a very bright future. Albeit that they still need to sort out the future of Aubameyang, but. I thought they deserved to win the FA Cup final after a bad start. And that's another thing. They recovered from that bad start. How many times previously you sort of see Arsenal in a game like that, you'd maybe concede early, then the game's over by half-time, but they grew into it. The water break definitely helped them out. They sorted a few things out tactically. And from that point onwards, they were the better team, even though there were one or two refereeing decisions went against Chelsea. I don't think anyone could argue about the end result. And good news for my next door neighbours. Arsenal fans, was about 30 of them, had an FA Cup party. So you can imagine how much I enjoyed that.
And all socially distancing as well, I hope. Mark mentioned there the future of Aubameyang. He's obviously crucial to the way they go about business. Does he stay? Does he go? What do you think?
Yeah, we've actually seen a few bets in the last few days for him to go to Barcelona. It's into 9-4 now at the moment. Barcelona had big interest in Martinez at Inter, but apparently they mightn't have the funds to complete that deal, so might be looking elsewhere. And absolutely, Aubameyang, I think since he signed for Arsenal, he scored the most goals of any player playing in the Premier League across all competitions. And we've seen in the cup final there. You know, it's very hard to put a price on a player that can do that for you. That second goal, the way he took it, it's just a world class striker. That's what it is. And like you said, when you're trying to buy players, strikers cost the most money for that reason. Just to touch on a few things that Mark said there, like, yeah, great hit by Mark for them to win the FA Cup. I took a bit of a beating. I'd been on Man City throughout the season, had them tied up in a couple of bets, and it was a bit of a sickener going out in the semi-final. But Arsenal price in the final, I think they're about 6-4, so a bit of damage limitation, was happy to get involved with that. There was no way they should have been that price against Chelsea. They wouldn't have had the gap that big. And if you actually go back, you know, they've had a bit of luck in the FA Cup run. I thought Sheffield United were probably the better team in that round. If you look at the first half against Leeds, Leeds were by far the better team in that game. Going back, I think that was the third round, and probably Leeds a bit to why Leeds are the price they are to maybe finish top half next season in the Premier League, or why they're such a big price for relegation. But all in all, like, Arsenal definitely heading in the right direction. They appointed the right man in Arteta. Nice to get an FA Cup. It's, you know, gives everyone a lift. But yeah, see what business to do between now and the start of next season. And one other point to make, and it's a really important point: European football next season is really going to be tough. You're going to need a squad because there is very little room for dates. It's going to be a congested schedule if you're getting into the later stages of European competition next season, with the season being so condensed. And what that would do is maybe have a look, your likes of your League Cup or your FA Cup, anyone that's not involved in European football could be a bit of value, because any team involved in European football, there's going to be scenarios where it's possible they're not even going to be having their first team in the country to play the game. Something similar to what we've seen with Liverpool against Aston Villa. I can see a few scenarios like that possibly occurring next season. But yeah, definitely Arsenal fans can look forward to next season for sure, and especially if they can get Aubameyang to put pen to paper.
Definitely. I think congested is probably an understatement. It's going to be very busy indeed. Jack, final words on Arsenal then before we move into the preview section. I know it's still very early to say, and there's a lot of business to be done, both ins and outs, but promising signs for Arsenal fans.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if they keep Aubameyang, even if he goes next year on a free, that's probably 15 points in the league. He's just so good. And if they're trying to build something and work out from the back, if you've got him up front, like we saw on Saturday, he was just the outball, wasn't he? Down the left flank, cut in and score. That was the game plan, really. And if they can keep him, even if they lose him on a free next summer, I think things are looking good under Arteta. As Mark said, he does seem to have something about him. I think the extra 18 months or so being an assistant with Guardiola has helped him out. And I think the future's bright for Arsenal. Sorry, Mark.
What else can we do as Spurs fans? We're playing terrible football. They're playing, you know, the kind of football we've been used to watching in the last few years. But it's just the way it is. We still beat them. Don't forget, we still beat them.
Well, sorry to butt in there, Mark, but I think that I would be a bit worried about Chelsea the way they've been playing over the last few weeks, and that the second goal in the FA Cup final, that Lampard seems to be buying his way out of. Buying his way to success, but we saw that goal against Manchester United on the opening day of the season, and it just seems to be, I don't know if he's got the tactical nous. Sorry to go a bit left field there.
Well, there we go. Let us know if you agree with Jack by tweeting us at Racing Post Sport, and we'll get your thoughts over there. Right, let's move on to the Europa League then. Of course, we did discuss this last week. It was under the expert eye of Mr. Bruce Millington. I wasn't around last week, but we'll touch on the games once again. Games across Wednesday the 5th and, of course, Thursday the 6th. Apologies if you're listening on Wednesday. Hopefully, you're listening early enough to catch our thoughts. The first games kick off at 5 to 6, so relatively early. Let's get Paddy Power's pricing on Manchester United's game. It's on BT Sport 1. Jason, how are you pricing this one?
Yeah, so obviously this game is going to be a bit of a dead rubber. We've Man United 1-5, we've the draw 11-2, and LASK at 11-1. Very hard to put up a tip in this game. I suppose the outright is probably where you could start to look. If you're looking to back something in the Europa League, like I say, unlike most outrights, you'll get paid within the next 2 weeks on it. And Man United at the moment are just too short in the outright. We have them there, best price at 2-1. And seen on Twitter last night, Liam Flynn's piece, actually, it was a really good piece on the Europa League outright, and I'd have to agree with him. Man United just too short. Obviously, United are going to make the quarterfinals 5-0 up from the first leg here, but as it stands, it looks like they'll meet Başakşehir, the Turkish champions, in the quarterfinals. Turkish champions are never easy games, but they've got a few players with Premier League experience in that team. Gael Kişi, Martin Skrtel, Demba Ba, even Robinho, who you might remember from Man City and Real Madrid. So that's not going to be an easy game in the quarterfinal for Man United. Now, Liam did make the point about motivation. United already securing Champions League football. I don't think it's as big a factor for this kind of a mini tournament. When you're talking about motivation in an outright, you're normally talking about the Europa League being played over 3 or 4 months. And in that scenario, you know, United might rest players because they'd have more important league games. But in this short 2-week tournament, I think any team that's involved is going to be as motivated as any other team to win it, regardless of whether it's needed for European football next season or not. But I just, at that price, that Man United are just too short, given the teams that are in it, who they're likely to face in the semi-final, whether it's Wolves, Sevilla or Roma. United are too short for me, and I'd actually agree with Liam. He tipped up Leverkusen on the other side of the draw. We're actually ducking them at 5-1. I think there's possibly 7-1 out there on them, so I'd have a look at that. It's probably a good bet. But yeah, this game is probably just, United will probably treat it as a training session and just get ready for the tournament next week.
Definitely, yeah. As Jason mentioned there, well worth a look. Liam's pieces in, of course, Dan Childs and Mark. Comprehensive previews over on Racing Post Sport. It's all on the website. Check it out. Really good reading. Mark, are you approaching this in a similar way to Jason, or have you got a fancy?
Yeah, I think it's difficult to have a strong opinion on this game. I mean, Igalo's 11-4 to score first with Paddy Power. I mean, I assume he's going to start up front, and he's done well when he has started. I mean, he doesn't do much outside the box, but he comes alive in the penalty area. It's a Team News based one, I suppose, really. As long as he starts, but that looks as good a place as any, really, for what should be, a routine and comprehensive win, where they'll probably treat it as a training session or friendly ahead of, more difficult tests ahead.
Definitely. Okay, let's move on to Thursday's game. Jack, we'll get your opinion first on the Bayer Leverkusen versus Rangers game, 5-6 on Thursday on BT Sport. Jack, thoughts on this? Have you got any fancies?
3-1 from the first leg. I fancy home win, both to score. I just think Leverkusen score loads of goals. I don't know if you saw Rangers' 1-0 win at Aberdeen, but I think we could have played in that game. It was such a slow pace and it was just quite poor, I thought. I think they'll get something, actually. I do like this front three they've got with Kent left and Hadji on the right. Morelis maybe down the middle. Bayer are an impressive side. They've got loads of goals in them, and I just can't see Rangers keeping them at bay.
Jason, I mean, how are Paddy Power seeing this? I'm quite excited for this.
Yeah, we've Leverkusen 4-7, the draw 3-1, and Rangers 4-1. In terms of to qualify, you can get Rangers at 16-1, but obviously I'm back with Leverkusen. We have them there as short as 1-200. It's just hard to see Rangers causing an upset here, to be honest. They have been good since starting back, won all their games in pre-season, got the win against Aberdeen at the weekend. But I agree with Jack there. Probably Leverkusen and both teams to score there at 21-10 is probably worth a look. But yeah, it's hard to see Rangers turning this leg around. And yeah, like I said, I agree with Jack there. Leverkusen and both teams to score is probably a good play.
Mark, do you agree?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of Leverkusen sort of winning the game, you'd be slightly nervous because obviously they haven't played since the DFB Pokal. So that was 4th of July. So they've had a long break. So they're not fitness wise. They're not in the same place as what Rangers are. And I think that could count in terms of Rangers being more competitive than would ordinarily, be the case for a game like this, where, we saw in the first leg, really, that Leverkusen are vastly superior. That looks like, I don't want to just agree with everything that's been said, but I think probably Leverkusen to win and both teams to score probably is the way to go in this one.
Okay, then, gents, you're nicely warmed up now. Let's get into a game that's still very much in the balance, and that's Wolves against Olympiacos. This is an 8 p.m. kickoff, Thursday, the 6th of August. That's tomorrow, on BT Sport 1. The aggregate scores 1-1. Jason, Paddy Power's prices?
Yeah, we've the match odds 8-13, the draw 5-2, and Olympiacos 9-2. And to qualify, we've Wolves 1-4 and Olympiacos 11-4.
Mark, I'll give you the first say on this. How do you see it going?
I was a little bit concerned with how Wolves finished the season, because I think they had opportunities to definitely get in that sort of top four, particularly the way that Leicester collapsed and some of their late season results, you know, weren't great. Drop points, didn't they, at Burnley, lost at Sheffield United. They then, you know, still had an opportunity to secure guaranteed Europa League and a 2-0 against Chelsea that they were beaten. The kind of game where ordinarily you'd say when Wolves are at their best, that kind of game suits them away to a big team. But I still think that this is a good opportunity for them to win. Olympiacos did quite well in terms of the Champions League when they played against Tottenham, saw both of those games. The best player was Pedence, who was then signed by Wolves. And I just think with Olympiacos that they were, I thought they were lucky against Arsenal when they kind of just edged them out, and they don't get much of a test. They've dominated the Greek Super League, but if you have a look at sort of Greek teams' results in Europe, that league is, you know, it's not where it was 10 years ago. And I think the Wolves are, they're never a team I love to back at, you know, odds on at home or whatever. But I do think they'll win, and maybe Wolves to nil might be the way to go, or Wolves to win an under 2.5 goals. So as Olympiacos chase the game in the last stages, that's where they might get undone in what could be a low-scoring game.
Yeah, Jack, a good opportunity for Wolves here to progress, isn't it?
Ah, fantastic opportunity. I think they were the better team in Athens, weren't they? And I do have concerns in that they did drop off. And maybe the end of the season with this fortnight kind of came at the right time for them. But Olympiacos won't have Ruben Semedo, who got sent off in the first leg. And I think that's a big blow for them. He's a real talisman at the back. And for me, it's got all the hallmarks of, like Mark said, maybe Wolves 2-0, 2-0, 1-0. Wolves under 2.5 goals. It'll be tight. I don't think it'll be that exciting, but I think Wolves will have enough.
Jason, sorry, I think I cut you off earlier. I'll give you your say now. Go on.
Yeah, no, kind of agree with the boys. If you look at the prices that went off away at the Spurs, I think Spurs went off 3-10, and then Arsenal were probably about 1-2 for the home leg. So 8-13 Wolves, like, the market is probably starting to respect Olympiacos just that little bit more, but Semedo is a big loss, and there is a doubt over their goalkeeper, Jose Zah, as well. I'm reluctant to get involved in the prices. We'll be watching the game. I think it'll be good. This is what we want at this stage of the season. It's massive. It's a European competition. It's last 16 to get into a quarter final. It should be really good. But just reluctant to back Wolves. You know, odds on fabs like that, we know Wolves don't always deliver or can be slow to get that goal. Could be a tight first half, and Olympiacos can chase the game later on. So maybe have a look at, you know, half-time draw, or maybe even 0-0 at half-time. A lot of Wolves goals come in the second half. But yeah, it won't be a walkover for them by any means. Like I said, Olympiacos knocked out Arsenal in the last round and came back, I think, from 2-0 down at home to Spurs. And then away at Spurs, I think they were 2-0 up. And the defender completely misses cutting out across at the front post that allows Spurs to get back into 2-1 just before half-time. Otherwise, I think they might have gone on to win that game as well. So, yeah, it won't be an easy game for Wolves, but will be a tense watch and a good watch.
Yeah, tricky to find too much value in them games. As I mentioned earlier, loads and loads of comprehensive previews over on the Racing Post Sport website. So head over there if you want a bit more reading on the Europa League. It's time for a break now, but we'll be back in a moment to have a look at the Champions League. And boy, it looks tasty.
I'm Jose Mourinho. I know a thing or two about being special. Being on the front cover of Rolling Stone magazine? Special. Winning the daily jackpot on Paddy Power games? Not special.
Understood, Jose. Yes, someone wins an average £40,000 jackpot every single day. So if you win, don't think you're special. Daily jackpots by Paddy Power Games. Jackpots must be awarded by 11 p.m. and vary from day to day. Jackpot is shared with other operators. Available on selected games. T's and C's at paddypower.com. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
Hello and welcome back to the Football Postcast here on the Racing Post, your one-stop shop for all of your finest football analysis. We've taken a look at the Europa League. Now it's time for the Champions League. A really exciting few games this week. Mark, let's start with the outright, Mark. I don't think we've discussed it too much in recent weeks because there's been a hell of a lot of other football going on. What do you make of it? Where do you see the value in this market?
I think that most people will probably look to attack the half of the draw that's got Atletico Madrid, Leipzig, Paris Saint-Germain, sort of Atalanta. That kind of area of the draw looked ripe for an each way bet. And I thought Atletico Madrid, and this is a team that I've been really sort of down on for most of the season. That 1-0 win they had in February against Liverpool in the first leg, that was kind of classic Simeone team, scored early, was a set piece, and then, you know, defended for their lives. That seemed to sort of change the, I think, the whole kind of season for them. Then they went to Anfield, they're outplayed for large spells, which is not that unusual for Atletico Madrid, but they found a way. And, you know, if you count that one as a victory, because they did win 3-2 after extra time, they're now unbeaten in 18 matches. And that goes right back to February, when they lost 1-0 against Real Madrid right at the start of February, February the 1st. So they've improved since then. That was also the last time they failed to score in a game. So, you know, and one is usually enough when they've got Oblak in goal and Jimenez at the back. So I think that Atletico will enjoy playing Leipzig in the quarterfinals. It's Leipzig team missing Timo Werner. I expect them to get through. And then in the semi-finals, assuming they do, it's Atalanta or Paris Saint-Germain, two teams that are much better playing football than Atletico. But I think Atletico will enjoy playing both of those, because they'll be able to sit back, hit on the counter. And, Paris Saint-Germain are the kind of team that's the shortest priced in that bracket of the draw. But, of course, Mbappe's an injury doubt against Atalanta. They've only played a couple of matches. They've been, since COVID, the season, of course, cancelled in France. So they're vulnerable to Atalanta. And then, you know, so that means they're less likely to get through, I think, than ordinarily would be the case. Atletico Madrid could be looking at Atalanta in the semi-final. And, of course, Atalanta have been a wonderful team to watch, and I couldn't really put anybody off backing them. But I'd still rather be on Atletico. I just think that, in a one-off tie, their defensive nous, and we've seen in sort of international football that these kind of tournaments, these mini tournaments or knockout stages, really it's about keeping clean sheets, particularly if players are a little bit tired after a long season. Portugal bored their way to a European Championship success. France, for all the talent they had, played on the counter-attack as well. So I think it's difficult for those teams that play the expressive football, maybe. I just think at the prices, Atletico Madrid look the each-way bet to me.
So, Jack, Atletico for Mark, and I know we've obviously heard a lot about Atalanta as well. Other than them two, are there any other teams that really take your eye?
Well, funny enough, Atletico were my pick, though, because they were so good against Liverpool, and because everyone was... The way it was covered was if they'd killed the game, and it's like, oh, that's what they do. And I think this format, like Mark says, really suits them. Atalanta, we know Josip Ilicic, she's absent. He's on leave at the moment, so he's not going to play. And I think that's a huge blow for them. Bayern Munich were fantastic on their way to the Bundesliga, but like with Bayer Leverkusen, you mentioned earlier, their the break they've had. Manchester City, is it their year? It was a tactical masterclass against Real Madrid in the Bernabeu. They've got a huge game tomorrow, which I know we'll come on to, but I think we'll just have enough to get through. But for me, it's City and Bayern. They're the two best teams in Europe for me.
Okay. Jason, I know your excitement levels are through the roof. I know you're really looking forward to this. So which team will your money be going with?
Yeah, it's three yeses. It's a hat trick. I'd be going with Atletico Madrid at the current prices. Just to rattle them off real quick, we've Man City and Bayern Munich looking both at 3-1. We've PSG 5-1. You can get Atletico Madrid. We're still joint best price at 8-1 on them. Barcelona 9-1. Atlanta 9-1. Leipzig 14-1. Best price event is 18-1. Real Madrid 25-1. And then you have the outsiders. Just to add to what the lads have said, they've already given the reasons why, but Atletico Madrid in that game against Leipzig as well, we've said Werner's missing. I think he got 7 goals in his last 9 games at the back end of the Bundesliga season. But there's also doubts over Sabitzer and Patrick Schick, and Poulsen's already out by the looks of it as well. So they will be missing a bit of a trek going forward in that game, which is another reason why Atletico Madrid on that particular match, and therefore for the outright, are a good bet. I do think the match prices for PSG and Atalanta, I think PSG are still a bit big, even with Mbappe missing. And therefore, feeding that match price feeds into the outright. I think Atalanta, the price is gone. I think they're just a bit too short now at this stage. But if you got on them early, you know, early in the competition, they were out to 1,000 to 1. You know, they were virtually out of competition, you know, 3 games into the group stages. And one small advantage to Atalanta, I presume, is that they've never had any home games in the Champions League. They've been playing at the San Siro all season. So maybe they might adjust a little bit better to, you know, the neutral venues when it gets to the mini tournament next week. But in the other half of the draw, I'd agree, just pick between Man City or Bayern Munich. Licking the lips at the thought of this being a semi-final. It should be a semi-final. So I pick, if you want the short price, pick one of them and just back them. Or if you want something that's a bit bigger, you could have a look at Atletico Madrid and even take a bit of each way value on.
Jason, yeah. I was just going to ask, if City and Bayern do play each other in the semi-final, agree with you, it would be, you know, it probably should be the final. How do you think you'll be pricing that one up? I know that there's, you know, injuries can happen or whatever, but just sort of, you know, how do you think you'd be doing the qualifiers for them two on a neutral venue? Who's better, Bayern or City?
If they're both full strength, and by full strength I mean a fit Aguero, I'd have Man City slightly better, slightly fabs. You'd be going 10 to 11 Man City, but Aguero won't be back for that. And I could see the semi-final actually going off Pickham. And that's just kind of, you know, it's that's what we love about European competitions. They're that bit harder to price, but that means there's more opportunity in them. And like, just looking at closing prices and how, you know, what price Bayern Munich went off against Chelsea is probably a good gauge to help you try and see what kind of ratings there are between those teams. But I think in the semi-final, given what it'll be at a neutral venue, obviously, one-off game, like even the two coaches, like you probably just side with Pep having that bit more experience. There's no manager has won more Champions League knockout ties than Pep Guardiola, something like 26. So even those little things will probably, even if you think both teams, the starting 11s are the same, maybe Pep just might edge it a bit on the sidelines. But like I said, licking the lips, it'll be a hell of a semi-final.
Absolutely. Brilliant insight from the gents there, and a clean sweep for Atletico. Maybe one to look out for. OK, let's get into the games then. They're across Friday and Saturday, the 7th and 8th of August, all televised on BT Sport. And let's start with Juventus against Lyon. Lyon lead in the first leg. They're 1-0 up. Jason, how are you pricing this match?
Yeah, so we've Juventus in the 90-minute 2-5, the draw 7-2, Lyon 6-1. To qualify, we've gone 3-4 Juventus and even money Lyon. It's going to be really interesting. I think Juventus are probably a bit short. Couple of reasons feed into it. Like, if you look at the game that they played, it's probably as good a thing to gauge as any. Like, Lyon did win that match. Juventus did dominate, but failed to get a shot on target. Lyon defensively were quite solid at the back. They decided not to man mark Ronaldo, but just to get their numbers back, get their structure right. And it paid off in that particular game. Like I say, Juventus, no shots on target. Dybala had a goal ruled out. Other things in favour of Lyon since that game is obviously Memphis Depay coming back from injury. 5 goals in 5 games in the Champions League, 9 goals and 12 starts in League One before he got injured. So at the prices, I just think Juventus are too short. I know they did win Serie A, but they've kind of switched off a bit after they did. Like, they'd one win in their last 4 games. I know they made some changes in those games, but you know, Rudy Garcia, since he took over at Lyon, you might look at the French League One table and think, geez, Lyon have been very bad this season. But when he took over, he took them from 14th in the table up to 5th. And I think if the season finished out, he possibly would have got them into the Champions League places and kind of where you would expect Lyon to be. Lyon also, you know, they kept PSG scoreless last week in the French Cup, took them to penalties. So at the prices, I just think I'd rather be siding with Lyon in the prices. So Lyon to qualify, maybe even money, I'd have a look at that. If you want something that's a really big price, you can get Lyon each way 100 to 1. But like I said, they're going to have a very difficult route in the quarterfinal, semi-final for the each way, even each way part of that to click. So look, if you're looking to do a double on the Friday night with the two games that are on, maybe just Lyon to qualify at evens is what I'd be putting in.
Jack, can you see Juventus turning this one around?
Yeah, I can actually. I think they've just got, but yes, they've had a bad run. They've won only 2 of the last 8 in Serie A. But Maurizio Sarri said it himself. His team were tired. They've been rotating pretty heavily. And it will be typical Juve just to squeeze through. They've only lost 11 times in 80 home matches in the Champions League. They do have habit of getting through these games. Saying that, I absolutely love the way that Lyon play. It's quite refreshing. And as we've said, Memphis Depay is back fit. He's been talking a good game as well. Rudy Garcia's a good coach. But I think that lack of match fitness, they played okay, I thought, against PSG in the Coupe de la Ligue final, Lyon. But whether they have that extra attacking nous, even with Memphis back, I think they're going to need to score. And whether they can do this against a Juve side who, yes, they're not as strong at the back as they have been in recent years, I'm not entirely convinced. And it's just got Juve to zero for me.
Jason with Lyon, Jack with Juventus. Mark, I'll give you the final say on this one. Who are you with?
I probably won't have a bet in this game, but if I were to have a bet, I'd rather be on... I'm not in terms of the to qualify. I think I'd just go for Lyon, draw no bet, because what you could see happening here is that sort of bit of a false economy game where, you know, it could be sort of 2-1 to, say, Juve, and then they have to play ridiculously aggressive to try and score another goal and they get done, or, you know, it's a draw and they've got to chase it and then they end up losing. I just can't remember the last time Juventus played well. And I've just looked at the fixture list while Jack and Jason were speaking there, and sort of going back and thinking, when was the last time Juventus played well? And I think you have to go back to the last game of before lockdown, when they beat Inter 2-0 and thoroughly deserved that success. But, you know, they lost 4-2 at Milan. They were pretty poor in the Coppa Italia when they reached the final, but were beaten by Napoli on penalties, conceded 3 times against Sassuolo. Atalanta just dominated them. They were penalties, but they were pretty soft penalties. Got the draw in that game. Yes, they've been rotating heavily, so I'm not that bothered the fact that, you know, they come into this with 3 defeats in 4, because they have been messing around with the team. But they didn't, you know, when they got beat by Udinese, that was a team that was picked to win the Scudetto that night. And they've lost to Udinese. So I Lyon have got a team that's got potential. Last year, they went to Man City and caused them all kinds of problems. And Ndombele since left them, and he played really well that night. But they've still got, I think, the threats in the final third to give Juventus a proper game. And so I'd probably rather be... There's similarities, I think, between the way that Lyon play and the way that Ajax ran rings around them last year in Turin. So I definitely wouldn't back Juventus. For me, it's either a no-bet game or you try to side with Lyon. And in terms of getting with Lyon, I'd rather be on the bigger prices, like to win or to draw no bet, than simply to qualify. I think if it gets really close, then I'd probably rather be with Juventus, you know. But I wouldn't be backing Juve at 2-5 or whatever they are.
Brilliant stuff, Mark. Yeah, and an intriguing encounter, that one. And the next game up, wow, this is sure to be a cracker. It's again 8:00 on Friday, the 7th of August. Manchester City taking on Real Madrid. Manchester City go into this one with a narrow lead. It was 2-1 in the first leg. And Jason, what does that mean for the prices?
Yeah, so 90-minute market, we have Man City 4-6, to draw 10-3, Real Madrid 3-1, and to qualify, we have Man City 1-10, and Real Madrid 11-2.
And where's the value for you in this game?
Yeah, I think it's going to be quite tight, a lot tighter than people are expecting in terms of goals scored. Now, Madrid's, you know, coming off the back of some really good results, you know, the won all 10 games in La Liga that mattered post-lockdown and then drew the last one against Leganés. But in those 10 games, it's important to note that 6 of them, they only won by a single goal. And 5 of those games, they actually got penalties in it. And 4 of those penalties were actually to open the scoring in those games. So it's not that Madrid have been brilliant. They've probably been more functional than brilliant, I would say, but deserved to win La Liga in the end. And for that reason, you know, with them winning those games, we've actually seen their price shorten. You know, they were 35-1 at the start of June. They're into 25-1. People are starting to believe that maybe they can do something here against Man City, but I don't think they will. I think, you know, Man City, like I refer to Guardiola's record in terms of knockout matches, He's won more than any other. And that knockout game that they won earlier in the Bernabeu this season was actually the first knockout game that Zidane has lost as manager. It's, you nearly forget that he won, you know, three Champions Leagues back-to-back. It was an incredible achievement. But just for this game, just the way, you know, Man City finished the season, you know, they're flowing and fluid in attack. I just don't see Real Madrid winning this game or coming through. And for that reason, I'm looking to side with, there's value, I think, in the under 2.5 goals at 13-8, or even have a look at half-time score to be 0-0. That's 3-1. The reason I say that is this game's in for nearly 3.5 goals as expected in the match. But the first leg, it was 0-0 at half-time. We only seen the chances and the goals kind of come in the second half. And I just think that Real Madrid don't necessarily go chasing in the first half. Neither do Man City. Man City don't have to. And I can just see it being a tight first half and not that many chances or goals. And that's where I think there's a bit of value if you're trying to find something in this game. In terms of goal score markets, you could have a look at the penalty takers. Ramos is suspended, so Benzema will be on penalties. He's 4 goals in his last three games that matter. 21 goals this season already. Or De Bruyne for Man City, if you want to cite there. 13 league goals is his best return in any season for any team. So that's I think that there's just value probably in the under 2.5 goals at 13-8, just given the nature of the tie.
Yep, sounds good to me, Jason. Jack, yeah, Manchester City, free-flowing, a joy to watch. Do they win this game?
For me, they do, yeah. I'm City both teams to score, really. I think not having Ramos is huge for Real Madrid. And we mentioned that they were pretty relentless towards the end of the Liga. And I think the one thing I'd be worried if I was a City fan was that Real Madrid were, it's ominous that they were very similar to the team that won in the three Champions Leagues in a row, in that they won three Champions Leagues in a row and didn't play well at all for 3 years, just got the job done. And that's the way they seem to be playing in La Liga, and I think they'll try and wait by the time, try and bring City onto them, and then try and spring something on the break. But with no Ramos, Eder Militao will replace him. He's a good player, but he spent most of his time playing at Porto as a right back. He's played right back this season. Yes, he's played centre half a couple of times towards the end of the recent campaign, but I just think Man City have got too much going forward, and Real won't keep a clean sheet.
Mark, what about you?
I think it might be a little bit nervy. You know, Man City, even though there's no crowd there, I mean, Man City have had their heartbreaks in this competition. And I think that they'll be really sort of edgy. And so that's why I'm sort of kind of agree with what Jason's saying there about maybe it might be a slow start. But I just think, just playing on that a bit more, I was going to go for Real Madrid draw double chance, because I think that they're a team that can... I don't see him getting sort of hammered by City. I think they're too experienced to go chasing the match really early on. I think they'll play like a normal game for 70, 75 minutes and then see where they're at. I expect them to be in the game for a large part. I'm always a little bit nervous about Man City. And I know Aguero didn't play in the Bernabeu, and it worked really well for the way that City played with Bernardo and Kevin De Bruyne as sort of that, played with two false nines almost. But it always makes me nervous when Gabriel Jesus plays instead of Aguero. And I think he's a fine player, and Jesus actually, you know, was influential in the win over Real Madrid. But I'd still rather Aguero was playing if I'm back in Man City, odds on against Real Madrid in a game when they don't need to win. So I think Real Madrid very solid defensively. It's not only about the defence, it's the three in front of them, very experienced, Casemiro, Modric and Toni Kroos. And you know, they have got a chance because they've got, in Eden Hazard, somebody that wasn't available for that first leg. And he adds another dimension, I think, to that Real Madrid attack. And I think he'll make sure with Benzema that Man City can't take liberties at the back. And, Pep Guardiola would take a 1-1 all day long. So that's why I don't like backing Man City to win this game, because you know ultimately they don't need to win to get where they need to be.
Yeah, very wise, Mark. Two cracking games we've already previewed. Let's add a third to the equation. It's Barcelona against Napoli, BT Sport 2, 8 o'clock on Saturday. 1-1 in the first leg. Jason, the prices and who goes through from this one?
Yeah, so we've Barcelona 8-13, to draw 3-1, Napoli 4-1. To qualify, we've Barcelona 1-3, and Napoli 9-4. It's a really interesting game. If you look at Barcelona, they've missing a few players in midfield. Vidal is suspended, two stupid yellow cards at the end of the first leg. Busquets also picked up a yellow card in that game and is out. And Arthur is AWOL in Brazil, won't play for the club again as he's going to Juventus. So there's talks that Setien might change this game up, and he might actually go with a formation that was probably Barcelona's best performance under him this season away at the Villarreal, where he kind of went 4-3-1-2. And the 1-2 up top was Messi, Griezmann and Suarez, but they just constantly rotated. And his midfield three is probably going to be Frankie de Jong, Sergio Roberto, and one of the most intelligent players that you'll find in Rakitic. So I think Barcelona, despite, you know, some concerns in their options in midfield, will have a very good 11 out for this. Now, you listen to Messi, and, you know, any time he's talked about Champions League, he's kind of said, you know, Barca are nowhere near good enough to win it. And I tend to agree with him, but I do think that they'll have enough to come out of this game against Napoli. The away goal was so crucial after being a goal down. It's probably the only thing of note Griezmann has done since he arrived at the club was getting that away goal. And it's the reason why Barca are fabs to get through here. Whereas, you know, it's just hard to see Napoli under Gattuso. They've done very well. You know, they won the Coppa Italia this season. They do score in their games. They've scored in 11 of their last 14 games. But like I said, when you have Messi, Suarez and Griezmann on the pitch, you just see Barcelona scoring in this game as well. Messi, 25 goals, 21 assists this season. It's just ridiculous how he keeps going. So I'd be happy for Barcelona to back them in the 90-minute market, because Napoli will have to chase the game at some stage, and you know, Barcelona would be even more dangerous, I think, when there's space at the back. So I'd have a look at Barcelona maybe in the 90-minute market, but I'd hold off on backing them in the outright. They finished with their lowest point total in the league this season since 2008. That was the season before Pep came in. There's a lot of players just the wrong side of 30, and despite Messi's brilliance this season, I'd love, if one team was to win the Champions League, I'm not involved in them in terms of the betting, I'd love to see Barcelona win it, but I just don't think they can.
Jack, with all of that being said, the few times I have watched Barcelona this season, they haven't really impressed me. And I know Jason's alluded to Messi's comments there. He hasn't been overly impressed with their style. Is there a small chance for Napoli here?
Yeah, he described them as weak, and I think that's a pretty fair assumption, really. It just seems a bit chaotic under Setien. Obviously, Valverde wasn't entirely popular at the end of his time at the Nou Camp, but you do feel, I think they probably would have won the league if he was still in charge, because he was more pragmatic. Setien just seems to be almost in awe of his situation, and I will be surprised if he lasts until the start of next term. Napoli, they were good 3-1 winners against Lazio last time out. There's a doubt though over Lorenzo Insigne, who is a real talisman for them, cutting in from the left-hand side as well. Has been restored to that role, having usually played up front under Carlo Ancelotti. Gattuso has put him in his best position. And against a Barcelona midfield who will be a bit uncertain, as we've already mentioned, that's the suspensions and injuries and Arthur just not turning up for work. It's a bit chaotic in there at the moment. My worry is for Napoli. They've been a good team for a long time under Benitez, Sarri, Ancelotti for a spell, now Gattuso. But they just seem to fluff the lines when it comes to the big games. I remember a match against Real Madrid when they got a good result in the Bernabeu, then lost 3-1 at home. And I'm not quite sure they've got that extra edge, even with Gattuso in the dugout and having won the Coppa Italia. And Barcelona, they've been there so many times before. And of course, they've got Lionel Messi, and that's worth maybe a couple of goals before we even start.
Unlike Arthur, Mark, you very much turned up to work. I'll give you the final say on this one.
I'd rather do his job than mine. I was looking at both teams to score, but it is priced up fairly short. So I think you can sort of use that to your advantage, maybe in a couple of correct score dabbles. One of which is 2-1 Barcelona winning. But I do think Napoli have got, first of all, the quality up front to score goals, but also Barcelona at the back just haven't convinced. Whether Umtiti or Lenglet plays alongside Piqué, it doesn't really matter. That both made mistakes. And I think that Busquets missing is a blow, really, that calming influence. De Jong's a top talent, but I don't think he's quite sort of where Busquets is, just in terms of that knowledge of the situation. And, you know, De Jong was part of that very naive Ajax team that eventually, you know, got caught on the counter-attack when they were winning a Champions League semi-final by 3-0 on aggregate in the second half. I mean, that just shouldn't be happening. And so I think there's a goal in Napoli. It's just whether they've got the nous and the belief, really, to stop Barcelona. So 2-1 is one of them. I also think 1-1 might be a shout, because I'm not convinced by Barcelona. I also think that this is a game where no crowd is a problem for Barca, because referees have definitely been influenced at the Nou Camp down the years in Champions League nights. I mean, Robin van Persie got sent off for, was it not hearing an offside call at one stage? And it's not the only one. I remember Inter got through, but Thiago Motta was sent off really early on, wasn't he, in that game? You had, was it John Terry was sent off in a Champions League semi-final? You know, it happens quite a lot that referees are in, against PSG, the comeback. I mean, yes, it was a great comeback, but it should never have been allowed, really. I mean, there were more than one dodgy moment in that one from the official's point of view. So, I mean, Barcelona have had a fair amount of leg-ups down the years in terms of the crowd influencing results there in big Champions League nights. The fact they haven't got that this time around, I think, is an issue. I suspect that they'll get through, but I wouldn't be backing them at the prices to do so.
Great stuff, Mark. Yeah, just one more game to have a look at in the Champions League. Then it's Bayern Munich against Chelsea. 3-0 the lead for Munich in that first leg. Gents, we'll rattle through this one, because I don't think, unless there's a miracle, of course, that Chelsea progress here. Jason, the prices and a selection.
Yeah, Bayern Munich 1-3, the draw 9-2, Chelsea 13-2. Chelsea to qualify is 66-1, and it's not going to happen. Bayern Munich played 47 games, by my calculations, in the league, Champions League and German Cup this season, and only on one occasion have they conceded 3 goals, and, you know, Chelsea have to score at least 3 to get through. On that occasion, it was against Hoffenheim in the Cup, but Bayern Munich still won the game 4-3, and Bayern were actually 4-1 up in that match with 10 minutes to go. The only reason Hoffenheim got to the three was Bayern Munich switching off in the last 10 minutes. So really can't see any chance here for Chelsea. Bayern Munich did play a friendly against Marseille last week. Started with their best 11, and I expect them to do the similar here. Just to get the mindset right, just to keep the starting 11 getting tuned to a game kicking off. Play your best football in the first 45 minutes, and if there are a couple of goals up, we might see a few changes. So with that in mind, the angle I'd be looking at is maybe first half to have 2 or more goals. Chelsea probably come out maybe looking to get an early goal to try and do something. But Bayern just playing the football that they play will create chances against this Chelsea side. So first half, 2 or more goals is 11 to 10. Or you could go with Bayern Munich -1 at 5 to 6. If Bayern are 1-0 up, you can see Chelsea head starting to drop. It's been a long season. Disappointment in the FA Cup final last week. So Bayern Munich -1 at 5 to 6. Or first half to have 2 or more goals at 11 to 10.
Lovely. And Jack?
Robert Lewandowski is easy, isn't it? Anytime 4-9, anytime goal scorer. I think it's going to be an interesting game in terms of Bayern will have to make a tactical switch with Pavard being injured. He's got an ankle problem. That means Thiago will probably come into midfield with Kimmich going to right back. I don't know how long they'll persist with that as the tournament goes on, but it's tough to see anything other than Bayern storm into victory. Lewandowski is in fantastic form. Word coming out of the Chelsea camp seems to be that there's a few players frustrated about Frank Lampard's training methods, the over-fatigue, that's why they're getting muscle problems. And against a team that are all rock and roll like Bayern Munich, that's not good news.
And Mark?
I'm going to disagree with the other panellists, I think. And I was looking at under 2.5 goals and under 3.5 goals as the way to go in this match. And the reason was that I'm not sure that Chelsea will chase it. I think they might sort of accept their fate and just look to keep the score sensible. So, I mean, I think I think first half to have the most goals could be a lively runner, because as Jason alluded to, you know, Bayern probably will start with their best team. I suspect they'll get in front. And then you might just, the second half might be a real non-event. And so that's why it's sort of under 3.5 goals there. You are relying on, I think if you're backing the over 3.5, you are relying there on both teams you know, going for it for 90 minutes. I'm not sure that will be the case. You know, that the fact that Bayern haven't played competitively for so long, I think, is an issue. And also, given the way Bayern have been playing recently, I'm starting to think the 7-2 weren't such a bad result for Spurs back in October or whenever it was. I feel a lot more comfortable about it now than what I did at the time. But I mean, they're a great team, Bayern Munich. I'm just not sure that they'll be fully in their rhythm. And I think if you're Frank Lampard, you just take your medicine here and you know, make sure you just leave with your head sort of held reasonably high. You don't want to get beat 4-5 in a game like this where you're probably going out anyway on the back of the FA Cup final, because what has been a fair season suddenly, you know, looks a lot worse. So, I mean, I think if he's got anything about him here, he just sort of keeps it sensible.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. Some fantastic action we've just gone through there, both Champions League and Europa League. Of course, there's some other football going on. The Scottish divisions have, of course, kicked off. I did want to quickly give a shout out to Johnny Smith, who correctly chose Harrogate to get promoted. So well done to Johnny. I think he had King's Lynn to go up earlier in the season as well. So some good non-league tipping there. Jason, any other fancies across the divisions?
No, I'll just put up quickly two there in the Europa League wins on Thursday. Getafe have only one win in 11 games post-lockdown, whereas Inter, you know, collected 82 points in Serie A, and that's the best total since Inter did the treble under Mourinho. But just looking at the prices, it's one of those things, it's a gut. You look at a price and you think, that's a bit big. Getafe are 9-4 to qualify. Remember, Getafe did put out Ajax in the last round. Yes, they've had a bad run of it in the Liga post-lockdown. But I just think Getafe at 9-4 at a neutral venue in a one-off game. And given, you know, it isn't all happy at Inter, maybe it's okay between Conte and the players. His issue seems to be with higher up in the club. But just given the distraction of that maybe this week, I just think Getafe at 9-4 qualifying that game is one I'm probably going to have a little dabble on.
Jack, what about you?
Looking towards the weekend for me, Celtic have won the last three games against Kilmarnock 3-1. That's 17-2. I thought it was pretty good price. Kilmarnock Rugby Park can be a tough place to go. Rangers have certainly struggled there in the last few years due to the artificial pitch, and Odson Edwards obviously flying. He scored 4 in his last 3 against Kilmarnock, and I don't know what the others think about this, but I think a Premier League team may be looking at him, and others around Europe as well. I also want to echo Jason and head a bit to the Europa League. I think Shakhtar to beat Wolfsburg, both teams of scores a very, very good bet in terms of Shakhtar very good at home. They've only lost to Atalanta and Manchester City in the last 35. And if I was to pick an outsider for the Europa League, I think it would be them. Yes, they're a decent price, but I think they've got the potential to knock someone out as well. So Shakhtar and Celtic will be my picks for the next couple of days.
Splendid stuff. And Mark, what about you?
Not much, really, Jack. I was just looking in terms of Scottish football, and Aberdeen are favourites away at St Johnstone. I mean, I think ordinarily you'd say that's fine and deserving of that, but they didn't have a shot on target against Rangers. They've had a fair few injuries, you know, throughout this pre-season period, and the obviously the biggest of those, Sam Cosgrove, was somebody that people were really excited about. There was talk of a move maybe down to England, and McInnes said he's out for 8 to 10 weeks, so I think that they're probably going to miss him. So if I was to have a bet sort of this weekend, sort of outside of the Champions League, I'd probably look there.
There we go, then, a whole host of selections put up. But if the gents were to have one bet this week, what would it be? It's time for the Naps.
This will not be beaten.
Here we go, then. One bet from each of our panellists. This will be an enhanced treble over on the Paddy Power website. We'll link it in the description of this podcast, or simply head over to the Paddy Power website if you want a little dabble on it. Jason, what's your nap?
Yeah, for me, I'm going to have a look at Roma to qualify against Sevilla. Sevilla, their last 11 games in La Liga, they did really well. They went unbeaten. But 5 of those games actually drew. Whereas if you look at Roma, they finished with 7 wins in their last 8 games. this game, again, is going to be played at a neutral venue. And again, it's just that the prices, they look a bit wrong. So I'm going to go with Roma to qualify at 13-10.
Jack, you're up.
Wolves to win on Thursday. Olympiacos, I don't think they've really been tested in the Greek Super League. No Semedo's a big blow. Yes, Nuno Espirito Santo's men dropped off in the last few weeks of the Premier League, but I think the fortnight or so off will have done them some good, and they'll, having been the better team in Athens, they'll get the result they deserve.
And Mark?
Under 3.5 goals by Munich against Chelsea. For the reasons I mentioned really earlier on, Bayern probably lack rhythm. They only scored one in their last pre-season game against Marseille. And Chelsea have got some attacking injuries, which is one problem. And I think that they'll probably just look to save face here rather than go chasing the game.
So it's Roma to qualify, Wolves, and under 3.5 in the Bayern-Chelsea game. That's the treble this week. Head over to the Paddy Power website. That's all we've got time for this week. A massive thank you to the Racing Post Sports, Mark Langdon and Jack Ogilby, and Jason Murphy from Paddy Power. If you are having a bet this week, please do gamble responsibly, and we'll be back next week for a look at the next set of European knockout rounds. Stay safe, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Everything is better when it's bigger. Paddy Power's Same Game Multi allows you to combine a number of selections from a single match into one big bet. Check out the Same Game Multi tab and get building your bet. Terms and conditions apply. 18+, begambleaware.org.